Welcome to yet another replay of the ESG webinar series. How to build trust in the post-truth era is what we are going to explore. In this ESG webinar series, myself, Carmen Murray, and Kalnisha Singh joins hand with Paula Quincy as we tackle this extremely complex topic of trust. Now, over to the conversation.
Here you can be a troublemaker, a professional troublemaker. All right. So let me just tell you something. Somebody asked me the other day, so what is a professional troublemaker? A professional troublemaker is not an anarchist. No. A professional troublemaker is committed to elevating the room, and they are committed to take on the unjust of the world. And that is what we are as conscious leaders. So there you go. I would like to officially introduce my co-host, my professional troublemaker, partner in crime from Our Common Future. She is the founder of Our Common Future, but also a developmental economist. I'm Carmen Murray, professional troublemaker, but a connected marketer, and I work in that field. And I would like for you to take over, Kalnisha.
Hi, everyone. It's so exciting to be back here. I, like Carmen said, am a professional troublemaker. I wear that hat and that badge with pride and honor. And I'm very, very excited to welcome my very, very good friend, Paula Quincy, who, whether she acknowledges it or not, is also one of us troublemakers. Paula's very, very committed to reminding all of us that we live in a fundamentally human-centered world. She works and is very passionate about leadership and personal development, but with a very, very focus on the core of humanity, advocating for the creation of healthy relationships, robust communication. She's an advocate for mental health, everything that it means to be human in this wild, wild place that we live in. So Paula, thank you so much for lending us your time and your knowledge and your wisdom. And we're so excited to be having this conversation with you. And
I was going to say thank you, ladies. I'm excited to be here. And wow, what a discussion this is going to be.
Yeah. So, I mean, when Carmen and I started unpacking, you know, the different elements that we need to talk about or that aren't talked about in this work that we do, trust sort of formed the basis of everything, right? And a lot of our work with corporates, with our clients, with our grassroots communities, we sort of walk in there with an assumption that trust will be implied or a level of trust will be assumed. But we know that in modern times, particularly over the last, I would say, probably 5 to 10 years, trust has naturally eroded. So the levels of trust we can assume just by entering the room it's almost like the foundation has dropped. You know, we started at a certain level of, like, a level of trust that could be assumed through these, you know, initial engagements, but it definitely feels like the levels of trust or implied trust have definitely dropped. And we were starting to think about, like, why is that the case? And what do we do to now work towards creating trust again between us as individuals, but also between communities and between all of us that live in the society that need to work towards, you know, towards a better future? And that's sort of the basis of the conversation. And I think maybe let's talk a little bit about what it means and what it means for us as a start, and we can kind of take it from there.
Sure. Where do we even begin? I think first of all, it starts with self, right? As in can you trust yourself to do the right thing, to show up and act and behave in the right way? And, you know, we always say, can you do it when no one's looking as well as when someone is looking, right? Are you authentic and true to yourself? And for me, that's where it comes back to the fundamentals, the basics. And I think that is your core value system. Do you know what your personal values are and how authentically are you living those values? Mm-hmm. Also understanding that our values are not cast in stone. They shift and evolve as we grow and evolve as individuals. But we very seldom stop and take stock of what are our values and where are we at in life right now in terms of what life stage we're in and what life milestones we are kind of chasing, right, or ticking off in terms of making progress through life. And I think for me, I personally believe that one of the main reasons why trust has started to erode over the couple of years is we've lost touch with self. We've lost touch with core values and the value system of humanity as a whole. I think for me, that's kind of the starting point where I want to open Pandora's box.
That's incredible. I mean, obviously, from our conversations, Carmen and I have been discussing around, you know, the marketing messaging and how that sort of, how we've learned now sort of that we need to not take everything at face value from a marketing messaging perspective. You know, on the cereal box, gives you energy means there's lots of sugar and things like that. But from, I mean, from what you just said, and I feel like you slapped me across the face. it goes a lot deeper than that, right? It goes a lot deeper than the messaging we are fed. It's more about the messaging that we're telling ourselves or not telling ourselves.
Absolutely. It's those, you know, the stories that we grow up with, the narratives that we subscribe to, whether it's our from our childhood or whether it's from society at large. And we often don't stop to kind of check and go, well, is this still real? Does it still apply? Do I still want to conform to this? Or am I somewhere else in my life right now? And it's usually some kind of life-defining moment that makes us stop and take stock of life and the value and the meaning and the importance of life. And so in my previous lifetime, when I was in corporate, I was in the marketing advertising world. And, you know, it was always about the next campaign. And I love the creative side of it. And, you know, some people say marketing is all smoke and mirrors, right? You can twist the day so you can twist the creative in whatever way you want to tell the story you want. And there is some truth in that. But I think in today's world, we are becoming a lot more conscious. We are becoming a lot more educated. We are becoming a lot more sort of questioning around, is this real? Is this legit? Is this valid? And specifically in the marketing is like we're learning to read labels and we're learning to read the fine print and not just take things on blind faith anymore. And I think when it comes to marketing campaigns, and Carmen can probably add more in on this because it kind of in her area of expertise. But I think, you know, at the end of the day, if you're selling a service, if you're selling a product or whatever it might be, you want the consumer to trust you as the organization and to trust the product or the service because it delivers on what it says it's going to do. And that's where the trust is built. But especially the younger generation, we're seeing them question a lot more and hold organizations accountable around things like environmental impact. And there's this whole new sort of conscious awakening around what is healthy for us and what are, you know, the labels on products, particularly food products, in terms of what is being hidden in the labels and how good is it or healthy is it for us. So we're definitely shifting to not take things in blind faith anymore. And I think this is where the creative world is really struggling around. We've got a job to do, which is sell, but how do we sell it in a way that is authentic, that builds trust, that ensures repeat purchases from our clients?
Yeah, a very valid conversation. I think that all comes down to authentic intelligence, right? So we're living in a time where everybody is geeking out about artificial intelligence and what that can do. And we're forgetting about the human potential and the human element. And authentic intelligence, it's so necessary to, as you mentioned earlier on, is to drive this inward thing. I'm on this journey where I want to focus on conscious marketing, because I believe that we need to have an understanding that everything is interconnected. And if we start looking at challenges and the problems that we're trying to solve, because so many times I sit and I receive briefs and it's the same garbage in, garbage out. And those briefs don't speak to the real challenges. It's just a copy paste exercise and that you're continuously working from. I think also what really I'm starting to notice within what I do is that in the creative industry, I think that ideas are becoming democratized. So these devices are sitting around listening to everything that we're saying. We are following our competitors. We're doing all of those nice things. But this conversation, when we're over, we're all going to have some inspiration being served to us. And then our emails that we're sending to the whole world, the surveillance capitalism, as I would put it, you do your Miro boards and you're planning your strategies and you're doing all these amazing things. However, everybody's listening. The algorithm is listening, and you be, and your competitors are being served, and people are starting to feel like they can't be original anymore. They can't express their creativity the way it was. And everything is feeling like it's for information obesity out there. And because of the information obesity that is happening, people are going into this inward journey. We see it with the quiet quitting, and we see it with what's happening in culture. But as I believe the universe constitutes out of two opposites, as above, so below, as within, so without. So whatever is happening and going wrong in the marketing, or what's happening in that world, is now we're seeing, what do you call it, pyramid marketing, where the whole society, everybody's learned how to do marketing, and now it's even more obesity flowing out there. And I think this is the challenge that is happening with this, is that how many of these people are self-aware with what they are putting out in the world, because they've learned from us as marketers. They have learned how to do marketing to manage perceptions and not to manage authenticity. And now we're sitting with a bigger problem, because this is a big contribution to unsustainability. It's a big contribution to the world that we're living in. And yeah, that is where I'm at. Sorry for the long answer.
it's so fascinating, though, because, I mean, I almost want to take it back to, like, you know, trust starts with what's going on inside and knowing your own value system. Because what we also see happening is that the sense of self is almost being questioned in society, not because of any other reason other than the fact that there's less certainty now than ever before in the marketplace, in society as a whole. So, I mean, the example I always use when I'm making this point is that, you know, a generation or two ago, you know, your path was pretty set if you grew up in a middle-class household. Like, you went to a good school, you go to university, you get a professional job, you know, you work until you're able to retire, and then you are able to retire on whatever you've saved, and life kind of carries on, and the economy kind of moved in that sort of straight line, you know, straight line circle all the time. But that doesn't hold true anymore. It doesn't matter anymore, like, whether you're born into a middle-class family or not, whether you went to a good school or not, whether you get to go to university or not, your success is not guaranteed. Mm. And that's really, really, like, broken the foundation for a lot of us who... I mean, I've said this to you ladies, I'm a testimony of the anecdote, if you work hard, you'll be successful, right? My parents, I mean, I grew up poor and worked hard and now have achieved a level of success. But that reality, I can't give the same advice to my kids because the world is so different. Mm. So what advice do I give them? Any advice that I do give them as teenagers might be contradicted by the real world. So, and that creates a sort of crack in the trust relationship between me and my kids, because how relevant is my advice? How relevant is my parenting?
Wow.
Right. And those cracks in the sort of trust relationship are even bigger in the relationship between my mother and my kids, because the advice she's serving is definitely no longer relevant.
Mm.
Right. And so the sort of breakdown in trust, or this erosion in trust I feel in my life, it really comes down even to that level where, you know, what truths are we serving in our households that are maybe not true anymore, which for me is a big issue. And then you see that obviously rolling out in the narrative, especially in our country, right? So we have a large population of unemployed youth, and this unemployed youth, a large population of them, also have the rhetoric of, we did everything right. We were told to go to school and get a bachelor's pass for matric, and we did that. And we were told to apply to NASFIS and go to university, and we did that. And now we're still sitting in poverty, and we are still unemployed, right? And then that creates a breakdown of trust between the individual, the young people that are the future of this country, and like all the systems. And then it's no wonder that people choose to burn down infrastructure and, you know, demonstrate in that way, because these structures that mean something to us no longer mean anything to them, because there's no trust. And for us, I think, especially like in South Africa, on the African continent, this is something that we really, really need to grapple with. It's more than just the marketing messaging. It's really about what's holding our society together. And then how do we build that glue that holds us together? Right.
Wow. Sure, I'm going to open a can of worms now, just because we are troublemakers, right? And I think for me, we really started questioning trust in the system was post-pandemic, when all the data and the results started coming out around what was real versus what we were told, you know, and the truth behind a whole lot of things. And that, I think, has put the spotlight that was there for a very long time, but we didn't really speak about it, was how much can we trust the system? Mm-hmm. And because the pandemic was at a global level, it's the global system that was being questioned or is being questioned, right? So from a global level, you know, I'm going to say the big pharma and, you know, all the countries and how they managed the pandemic and all of that, and then down to your own countries and your own systems, you know, so systems within systems, and that knock-on effect, which talks to what you were saying, Kalnisha, from a generational aspect around, you know, what your parents were saying to you, to what you were saying to your children, this generational system of trust, which is it still relevant? And we all know it's not, because we've evolved, right? Mm-hmm. Especially the youth today, just a very simple, the jobs that, you know, or what they're studying for, those jobs haven't even been created yet. So they're studying for something that they have no idea about, because the jobs are evolving so quickly, just as technology and the landscape changes. So when it comes to creating trust in a system, there are so many factors that contribute to it, that any one of those factors, if they're out of sync, you've already got a wobbly foundation. I think of it as building a house, right? Those pillars that hold up the house and the foundation, and a solid foundation, that's what trust is. And when one of those pillars are wobbly, the whole foundation is wobbly, which goes back to what you were saying, Carmen, about, you know, what's above you is underneath you, because in the system, and I'm talking corporate system mainly, but again, government system as well, you know, leadership actually creates or embodies the trust by how they show up, how they act and behave, and what they, you know, what they model. And just as parents, we create the environment for children to model behaviors. Is it authentic behavior? Is it, you know, is it positive or negative behavior? It's the same in the workplace. And that's, you know, where we're seeing it now, especially in the workplace. Again, it started primarily from the pandemic with people working from home. Can we trust our employees to do their jobs at home? Because we can't see them. How do we know that they're doing the work? So what happened? We started monitoring them with software, and were they online? And then we you know, then there were cases of people were online, but that didn't necessarily mean they were working, right? So then we started keystroke monitoring software and all kinds of things like this. So that sense of being controlled and the whole big brother thing, just like our phones are listening to us and we're being watched all the time, is definitely contributing to, well, how real are things? How honest and truthful and authentic are things? And can we really believe what we're being told today?
So where does it end? I mean, are we going to like remove ourselves from being like productive in the economy to just watching our backs in terms of how we take care of ourselves? Wow. Or is there some sort of like movement or tipping point towards where we can get back to a trust-based society?
That's a good question. And I think there's definitely an evolvement to that, but again, it comes back to self in terms of taking responsibility for the stuff that you're taking in and how legit is it, because we are bombarded with so much information. I think we're all inherently, we have a built-in BS filter, right? But not many of us actually tap into that BS filter. We dismiss it. We kind of like, you know, and because a lot of us suffer from shiny object syndrome. Oh, this one's doing that. Oh, that one's doing that. Oh, I need to do that. You know, instead of like sticking to your sort of path and what you want to achieve in life or where you want to go in life, and making sure that whatever you are engaging on or who you're engaging with in that path is aligned to where you are at in terms of your authenticity and your core value system and your boundaries and all of that, because that's what's going to protect you from all these fake things out there, you know, things like fake profiles, you know, online scams, the pyramid marketing schemes. And there's more and more of this coming out because we're being exposed to more and more information to educate ourselves and to become more aware of these things. But as you say, it is exhausting, and trying to keep up with all of these things is impossible. Because just when we've grasped something, or I feel this anyway, just when I've grasped something, something else comes along, and it's like you've got to start trying. You're always trying to play catch up, which is where it's exhausting. And I think that's where you need to know where you're at, and whether this is at an individual level or an organizational level. Like, what is the journey that you're on? Because we never ever get to our final destination, right? Because the minute we get to where we think we wanted to get to, a new path is unfolded. So life is this lifelong journey of evolvement and changing landscape, and we need to be flexible to adapt as we go and make sure that the journey we're having is one that feels fulfilling and real and true for us at an individual level or at an organizational level, whatever that organizational vision or strategy or purpose is. And it's how we go about creating that that I think gives us that sense of I can trust the space that I'm in, as in the people that I surround myself with on a personal level and in the workplace, professional level. So the people we employ in our organizations, the service providers that we engage with, our customers, and the people we collaborate with and stakeholders, are we all aligned, and are we on the same path from a work ethic point of view, a value system point of view, and have we created a safe space where we can have those honest, robust conversations, and if need be, call each other out in our behavior and say, hey, that doesn't fit with where we're at right now.
You know, when I'm listening to this, I also just think a lot about micromanagement and, you know, how that has been playing out for a long time, corporate bullying and all of those kind of things. And the trust gap that is also starting to create. You know, there was a report that I was reading that there's people that work in organizations that don't have autonomy, and they don't trust the organizations because of how they are being managed by their direct superior. And also they are witnessing corruption, and they are witnessing these things happening because all corporates have become political. Same behavior as within, so without, right? And witnessing this, and there's this trust gap that is also starting to unfold within organizations. I'm not saying that's all organizations, but there is definitely that. But there's more importantly also this issue of the trust in innovation, where the trust index shared that a trust in innovation, that people are not really believing in the innovations that are being created, is for good. So what is your take on that, Kalnisha, and then let's take it to Paula.
Sure. I think innovation has been, I mean, the sort of fear, and I would say fear in inverted commas, of innovation is something that's, again, embedded in us. Because, I mean, what we see from a technology perspective, advances in technology are first typically adopted by military forces, you know, for defense or attack purposes, and then assimilated into society, into general consumer goods or whatever. So that sort of trust issue around innovation has existed for a long time, particularly in the technology space. And particularly from a capitalist perspective, because it's far easier to sell products on the basis of fear than it is to sell products on the basis of trust, right? So from a capitalist perspective, if you can identify a particular fear marker in your target market, so Paula hit the nail on the head with the sort of keystroke monitoring software that was, you know, that took off during COVID because companies wanted to monitor their staff because of a fear of lack of productivity, fear that the staff weren't doing what they needed to do when they were working remotely. And it's because, and so what happens is we see as lay people in the economy, we see the growth of these particular products as innovation, as what we recognize or what the market recognizes innovation. It's very innovative to have this keystroke monitoring software that's, you know, bought by the corporate, but it's also intended uses to control me. Which is a fundamental disconnect between how I want to be in the world and how I want to be treated as an employee, and how the company that I work for, the organization that I work for, wants to treat me. And that creates a sort of, it's a very, very big disconnect, and then a fundamental distrust, the process of innovation or how I experience innovation, which is, yeah.
I just would love to add to that. Well, you have the innovation, but how many of our innovations are tomorrow's problems are ending up in landfills? Like, are all of these innovations real innovations, though? Because the reason I'm asking that question is because there's such a trend debris. You know, we all, as you mentioned, Paula, the shiny objects, we're chasing shiny objects, but that's short-lived. Values is long-lived. And because of that, we're seeing this evolution of people just, you know, chasing trends and never going in depth into those trends. And then we're innovating on shallow trends and actually doing harm in this world. Sorry, Kalnisha, that's what I wanted to just point out about innovation, because that scares me.
Yeah, definitely. And, you know, the big thing now, right, is AI, right? And everybody knows, like, ChatGPT, but there are so many other AI tools out there. And, you know, there's the fear that people were talking about, and Kalnisha, you were mentioning around this fear that AI is going to take our jobs, right? But that's not necessarily the case. It's more the case of if we don't embrace AI, we will be left behind, and then our jobs will be gone because we are no longer relevant, right? So how do we upskill ourselves and educate ourselves to remain relevant, but at the same time, the responsibility of the people that are creating these AI models to do it in an ethical, moral way, which is where there's a big question mark, right? I mean, in the world of augmented reality, we have already had our first case, a reported case of rape in the AI world in terms of virtual reality, right? And so that for me is, well, you know, this is an AI environment, augmented reality, AR, and here I am, I go into this room where I'm engaging with other avatars, and then I experience an incident like this, you know? So how safe am I when I'm going into these platforms, okay? So where does the role and the responsibility lie with the people that are creating these innovations and the experiences from a user perspective, whether it's an organizational level or an end user, you know? So how are you keeping your employees safe if you are implementing AI and AR and all of these kind of things? And at the same time, at an individual level, how are you keeping yourself safe in these types of environments? So there's a lot of big question marks around the ethical side when it comes to the dark web and things, you know, that can, and how we can be, identities can be cloned and all sorts of stuff like that, which, again, the trust factor, especially from a digital technology world, you know, we all know someone that knows someone that's been scammed in some way or other, whether it's their PIN codes, their bank accounts, or whatever it was. So again, that's where technology and platforms are. There's a big distrust factor around using technology. And there's a lot of education that has to go around that in terms of currently how we transact in those environments, but also going forward with how innovation is going to continuously evolve.
Oh,
it is a very real reality that we need to consider. You know, for example, I'll give you an example. We are creating or we're using AI or AR from a learning and development point of view in organizations around training and development and upskilling people, you know, because and it's finding ways, especially with remote working teams, you can't always have people in the classroom to train them. So, and some programs are now being self-paced, self-study learning, which is where the AI and the AR is coming in around how do we create a more engaging experience, or how do we create a virtual reality where I feel like I'm physically going through that training myself. So let's say, for example, I'm being trained up to be a waitress in a restaurant. they can create a whole virtual reality with a layout and exactly what the restaurant looks like. And I can be the avatar that goes through that particular journey that a waitress would go through, from greeting someone at the door, taking them to their table, sitting down, taking their orders, et cetera, to make it more realistic in that it's almost like I've had on the job experience, right? It's part of the way that the world is going. And again, the trust factor around, first of all, as an employer, the responsibility on keeping your employees safe. Mm-hmm. And yes, there is human bias involved. And as I said, the people that are creating these platforms, what security measures are they putting in place that says their platform can be trusted, number one? And then number two, as I am using it, how do I know what my rights are and what my, my responsibilities are and rights of recourse if I have a bad experience? Where do I take that complaint to? Because nowadays, people, when you put complaints online, or how many people do you know, or maybe you've even experienced it yourself, you can't speak to a human being because it's a chatbot, or there's only an email address that you need to log your complaint or your query to, and 3 weeks later, you're still trying to get an answer, which then causes the distrust factor because that human element is missing. And that's where, my little soapbox is, we will never, ever, ever be able to replace human connection.
Yes.
Yes. So, I mean, my mind is doing all sorts of things. But what's really fascinating for me, it seems like there's such a huge parallel between like the trust environment and safety. So you fundamentally have to feel safe in order to trust and be safe in order to be trusted, right? What does it mean for us those of us that live in South Africa, where safe, there's still a very, very big question mark next to safety and security. Does that mean that our trustworthiness and our trustingness is fundamentally wobbly already?
Well, as I said, for me, I feel that we've lost the basics, the core fundamentals, which is value system. At an individual level, in family dynamics, if you just look at households and the divorce rate and the level of domestic abuse, and then communities, I mean, how many of us, know who our neighbors are? And when I say no, I mean, do you have them around for dinner? Or do you really know them? Or do you just wave as you drive past each other in the driveway? So that sense of community building and trusting the community has gone from what it used to be, right, in terms of our parents' generations. And when we come to the corporate workspace, that sense of trust, in which is primarily from leadership level, and that's where the culture strategy comes in place, the values and culture strategy with your people strategy together with the organizational strategy or vision. And the three of those together, if they're not aligned, that is going to create distrust in the system. And then from a government point of view, if we can't, if government is not acting in a trusting way. So let's look at policing. Let's look at bribery and corruption. Let's look at services and service delivery and all of those kind of things. It is going to contribute to the levels of trust in the system. And when I say system, I'm talking about systems within systems.
Well, I mean, it's absolutely fascinating. And I think also when we talk about trust, I think for me also, I think it is the currency of the 21st century, because we transact with emotions and it's the exchange of energy. And what makes this interesting to me is the concept around money, because when you go and you talk to different people, people have a different way of looking at money, like this abundant thinking that I see a lot of people talking about, that money is energy. The actual money in your hand doesn't have value. That money is energy. So what is that transaction that is happening? Are you trusting the brand that you're purchasing from? Or is it a grudge purchase? And I'm just interested to know what your view, Paula, would be on the future of money, and also in terms of not maybe future of money, but more about the trust in our money system, especially with BRICS and everything happening around that. How, and if you also just listen to how people talk about financial institutions, they don't trust this. I mean, our cables are going, we're losing disconnection, you sitting with digital money in your bank. If we go offline, I mean, a few years ago, I think it was a year ago or so, when all the banks went offline, you know, this is starting to create a underbelly of people going, do I need to pack a bag? Do I need to have like gold in a bag or something? You know, people are talking about bricks and they're talking about gold and all of that. You know, people are really not trusting the money system as well.
No, and just tip in case you're interested, the latest sort of notion or advice is to invest in Kruger coins so that if you need to pack a bag, at least you can take your money with you.
Oh my gosh.
So if you've got some spare cash lying around, apparently Kruger coins are the things you need to invest in. Hashtag.
Oh my gosh, apocalypse.
Oh. Yeah. Yeah, and again, you know, over the years, you know, going back to what Kalisha started with was around, you know, I had to work hard. And if I worked hard and I was loyal, I was then successful, right? And that's how we benchmark success. Where over the years, money has become a status thing, a prestige thing, an image thing, you know, the fancy car I drive, the house I live in, and it's, we want bigger and better to show that we've arrived and we've made it, you know, and we were chasing it. And then so many people lost it as well because of all these pyramid schemes and other sorts of things that are, you know, going around. And now I think people are becoming a little bit more aware of, well, maybe the best place is underneath my mattress, because then I know it's safe there, number one. But number two, then the tax man doesn't know what I've got. So are we being truthful and trustful when it comes to that? You know? Because it becomes a grudge purchase. There's so many things these days that are becoming a grudge purchase, you know, tax, SARS, PAYE, VAT, you know, all those kind of things. And you know, so many people are not paying their taxes. So why must I pay my tax? Yeah, and then with what's happening around the world, and that's probably more Kalnisha's department around the economic impact and sustainability and governance. Following policies or trying to implement policies, Kalnisha, that's your big game.
So what's really interesting, and I think we talked about this the last time as well, Carmen, is that a lot of what happens in the economy is very much driven by perception. So the example I gave you the last time is like, so the one surefire way to drive up your stock price if you're a listed company is just to maintain a squeaky clean public image, right? And that's why we have the whole public relations and branding and that whole kind of system that was created in order to help corporates, especially listed entities, maintain their squeaky clean images. You know, crisis communications and all of this. But what we're seeing now is that value of the perception is eroding, right? Mm-hmm. So it's not, I no longer have a perception of you because of what you say you are. I now have a perception of you because what I can see that you're actually doing. So it's more about the actions of the company, or the actions of the economy or within the economy rather than the marketing message, right? Which from an economic perspective or like some, you know, basic economic perspective, it's like a return to how it should be, but it means a lot of sort of volatile behavior from, you know, a market's perspective. We're going to see a lot of different it's going to be less predictable to know what like the dollar rand exchange rate is going to do as we start stripping away public perception from, you know, the value of the currency, like what's left. As we start stripping away public perception from the value of different companies, like what's left. And so we're going to see this sort of corrective cycle happening. That's what's predicted anyway. But it could mean like immediate volatility for us. So I would definitely jump on the Kruger coins bandwagon from that perspective.
Oh my God.
I know someone. I have a contact.
Yes. Okay, she.
An interesting sort of example, though, is like what happened with Steinhoff in South Africa, right? With the value of Steinhoff shares. So for a long time, Steinhoff maintained their share price because of the marketing message that they were selling and the stuff that they were writing in their annual and sustainability reports, until somebody decided to go look closely at the financial statements and the financial records and look closely at the behavior of the board of directors and the deals that were being made. And then the value completely eroded. It went like to negatives for a while. And what we're going to see is that happening on a grand scale, essentially, is the US market as valuable as what, you know, as what we're being told? Is the dollar as valuable as what we're being told?
Fascinating. Wow. I've got a question, actually two questions for the panel, for you, Paula, and then Kamisha, is what are the practical solutions to instilling trust?
So if we look at it from a corporate or an organizational perspective, right, as I said, there are those three pillars to or establish trust within an organization. And that those three pillars are the and they need to be in alignment, which is the strategy of the business, then the people strategy, so employee engagement and people strategy, and then your culture strategy, which is the glue that holds the two together or that aligns the two, right? And so you need to start with that first. But it also, it's constantly evolving as the organization evolves and grows, and as the needs of the organization and the people evolve and grow. And I think at a very basic level, it's around, you know, leadership walking the talk. We always hear that. But what does that mean exactly? And it means that, you know, just as children learn from parents, employees learn from leadership. They model their behaviors, they model their practices. And part of what we ask ourselves or question when we look to behaviors and actions, because actions speak louder than words, is, do I trust this person's character? Is he or she really trustful? And am I trustful? You know, how am I showing up? And that those character traits are built into our lives through our daily decision making as to what we perceive as versus right or wrong. And also, you know, as I said, how are we behaving when no one else is looking? Are we true? Is our behavior true irrespective of where we're at? And that's what people will trust you for, is to the decisions that you're making, how you're going about making those decisions, and how you are, behaving in terms of, and is it all aligned or is it just lip service? So, you know, in terms of from a leadership point of view, it's around clear values, having a clear vision and mission in terms of where the organization is going, the strategy, the people strategy, the culture strategy, that everybody's aligned, that it's very clearly articulated and communicated across all the touch points so that you feel it. You know, culture is something that you feel. When you, from the minute you walk in the door, what do you experience? What's the vibe? What's the atmosphere? And how consistent is it throughout the organization, from recruitment right through to the end to one day when you retire? Because that's the legacy that the organization is creating and leaving behind for people to take away with them when they leave. And so it's about leading by example. What is your code of ethics in terms of your own, but the business? How are you talking about it? How are you making sure people are following it? And this is around repetition, right? Repeating behaviors, repeating actions, and feedback is the most important. So across those three pillars, it's around, in order to sustain it, is, am I seeing it, or do I see someone modeling it? In other words, doing it, and what feedback am I getting from the system or the person? So nothing gives us a greater boost of confidence than seeing ourselves succeed and ourselves as an individual. When I get feedback about my performance or my behavior, the team or the organization as a whole. And feedback, there's a very fine line between criticism and feedback. Often feedback is given and it's internalized or interpreted as criticism, right? Mm-hmm. So feedback shouldn't just be on how you did it, or how you did, but rather how you did it in terms of reinforcing that positive behavior. Because when behavior is recognized and modeled, we are more likely to repeat it, that whole thing of positive reinforcement, positive psychology. And so rather catch somebody doing something good and recognize them and acknowledge and reinforce it rather than just focusing on what they're not doing.
Love that. So, Carnisha, we've got 4 minutes left. This conversation was so interesting and it just went by, whew, just like this. Paula, to your point, I think it's so true what you're saying is that it's really about how everything feels, right? I always say people are no longer seeking information, they're seeking wisdom. It's no longer about the words you speak, it's now how you make them feel. This is the new era that we're moving in, and that feelings are all going to come from actions and what we need to see out in the world, and that is going to be interrogated. I think in the world of AI, where the language, there's no lack of it. We are definitely going to need to find a new language where people can resonate with our actions and our words. Paula, do you have any closing thoughts? And then Carnisha, can you close off for us, please?
I would say if organizations want to build trust, it needs to start with leadership. They need to be authentic about it. They need to really care. They need to really care about why they need to have values in place and a culture strategy in place, because your culture is where your people thrive in. And if your people are not well, your business is not well.
I love that.
And I think for me, as a sort of parting shot and to close off the conversation, I think trust really is, and it resonates with me, that trust starts with self. I think it's increasingly important for us to know, who we are and how we identify. And not a lot of work is being done in that kind of space. I like the idea that we learn trust at home at the home environment, and then can build that trust through community, through society, through work. I do think that, I think more now than ever before, that these conversations around how to, develop these like intrinsic core human values, trust and integrity is like a core human value. We all talk the talk. But how to walk the walk, I think that's becoming of critical importance as we grow into this new world that is sort of developing in front of our eyes. And Paula, really, really thank you for your insights. Every time you speak, mind is always blown and feels like layers of the onion are coming off and peeling off. It was a really, really great conversation. I wish we had more time to go deeper into some of the key topics. And I think we must definitely explore this a little bit more, Carmen.
Absolutely. The more I'm looking at trust, the more complex it's becoming. Like it's values for me is so important. And, but your values can, it's like abundance, but abundance can't exist without scarcity. So you need to engage both sides, right? And I think for me, it all comes to being audacious inside out. Like you need to be brave to face yourself, face who you are, your values, but also be brave to face the things that you don't trust in the world and to make conscious decisions and say, listen, I don't trust this brand. I must look for a different option. I'm not going to transact with them because that is the voting of the wallet. I don't trust this person, but I'm watching their content. That is voting with attention. So we need to start really also looking at how we know things are not sitting well with us, but we at the same time also taking actions as individuals to ensure that we don't engage in those kind of things as well. I don't know. That's the closing thought that I have. But Paula, I just want to say, wow, your knowledge is beyond, and it comes through with such authenticity and such grace. And being able to navigate these complex conversations. And one thing that I really am realizing that if we don't have trust, we will work against each other. We will not work together. And in this time that we're living in, we need to start working together. So we do need trust, and we need to bring back trust in order to create a fortified and resilient future for us all.
You've been listening to another production from Solid Gold Podcasts.